Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of January 17th, 2018. Oh, I almost backslid a year. Anyway, today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, Mr. D.R. Tucker?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, very well. And we're also happy to be joined by climate hawk and author, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Ms. Mariah Tinger?
I am well, Mr. McIntyre.
Anyway, so this was kind of a interesting week, and we touched the last time we spoke on the divestment proposal from New York City and New York State, but we didn't actually get sort of to give it the attention I think it deserves. So let me. Dear, let me put the ball in your court. Can you tell us what New York City and New York State did last week that was out of the ordinary?
Yes, well, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio, as the New York Times notes, announced that they will divest the city's $189 billion pension fund of an estimated $5 billion invested in fossil fuel companies. The New York Times editorial notes that, quote, this puts the city on the same page as a number of other cities, New York State and many colleges where the divestment movement first took root. And this has gotten a lot of attention because, you know, when the push by Bill McKibben and others to have fossil fuel divestment take place, when this began about 6 years ago, it was essentially scoffed at and dismissed as some sort of, you know, esoteric exercise. But now, with the largest and the biggest financial power arguably in the world pushing to divest, this does suggest that there's some real meat and some real force behind this. And it should be noted that, you know, when the comparisons were made at the time this divestment effort started to the divestment of to divestment involving South Africa and the effort to use divestment to sort of bring South Africa to account in terms of its apartheid policies. And that took a while to get going. It actually started in the late 1970s, and it didn't really hit its peak until the early to mid 1980s. But once it got going, it was an unstoppable force. Mm-hmm. And this may prove to be an example of history repeating.
I agree, and I guess I would just to the other thing, I think, in addition to New York City, on the same day, didn't New York State make an announcement that they were also going to do divestment?
Yes.
Right? So there's 1-2 punch on the same day.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I had heard the same thing. Yeah, that was a great point about the divestment and for the apartheid in South Africa. South Africa, I've got that right, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And I, you know, the other thing I think that is really good for divestment is it gives everybody a chance to participate in a climate change action, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you can do that personally. You can have your business do it. You can have your state, your city. You know, it's a way that is accessible to every person. Whereas, you know, some other ways to participate in climate change aren't always accessible. And then the other thing is that it really serves to highlight the companies that are doing the worst damage to the climate. So mm-hmm. I think initially that's really all that, you know, Bill McKibben and 350.org and Go Fossil Free, that's sort of what they originally just wanted. Let's just highlight the people who, the worst of the worst. But it has really started to morph into much more than that.
I mean, you're talking about, you know, many billions of dollars from these. I mean, I read the Bill McKibben. There's a piece by Bill McKibben in the New Yorker, I guess. I mean, he was saying that New York City, of course, is the epicenter of finance for the world. And for those places, and I'm sure that de Blasio and the governor of New York are not insensitive to the interests of the financial markets in New York. And essentially, this is a statement that the long-term 30 or 40 year lifetime of these fossil fuel stocks is not good, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's not a good long-term investment, and that the markets see it that way. And in some sense, New York City is following the city and state are following that long-range vision of the market.
Right. I mean, you know, if you think at it from the perspective, it's well established that 80% of the carbon reserves have to be kept in the ground to keep our warming under 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. Mm-hmm. And so for the fossil fuel companies, particularly the coal industry, to be financially viable, they have to turn these reserves that have to stay in the ground into profit by extracting and burning them. You know, the whole entire world has said, oh, wait, no, you can't do that if we're going to stick below 2 degrees Celsius, which is what we're trying to do.
Right.
So, you know, I think I was talking to Joe Rahm for when I was interviewing him for my book, mm-hmm. Protecting the Planet. And he said basically that, you know, if making sensible and educated investments is important to you, then being highly informed about climate science is a sharp tool in your toolbox. So just, you know,
I guess the implication of that is that there's, there are two reasons to divest. And I guess I'm interested in both of your opinions about whether or not there's much distinction. But one is a moral reason that you don't want to be participating in tainted money. And the second is this true market risk that if you own oil stocks, you're on a bubble, right? And you want to get rid of them, in a sense that's divesting. It's not clear. I mean, I'm wondering if De Blasio and Cuomo in New York are taking this stance. Which of those two rationales have they chosen? I mean, do they need to make that distinction, or do you agree that that's a, you know, two different reasons for divestment?
I feel like it has two faces, right? Mm-hmm. The first face is that if you do it now, you are fully licensed. You have the full social license to say, I'm doing this because it's the right thing to do for the planet, right? Mm-hmm. So you can have that face, and you should have that face. But to me, there is the other face that's like, and it makes a whole lot of business sense, as you talk about, you know, the bubble, right? If you want to get out before it pops, because once it pops and everyone's fleeing, you know,
it's too late.
You're already in trouble. Exactly. And so that's why I think being an early adopter in this case is pretty smart, because you're going to be ahead of the curve.
Right, but you
look good while you're doing it. It's also, you know, right?
It's very important.
To your point, Mariah, this is also, or at least it should, place pressure upon other entities that have been heretofore resistant to divest to do so. I think immediately about the controversy for the past several years now that our friend Roger and Susan Schmel has been involved in, among others, involving Harvard University and to a lesser extent MIT, just steadfastly refusing to divest despite strong pressure from faculty from students, from alumni to divest. And yet Harvard and MIT for the past 4 or 5 years have been digging in their heels. And now you have to ask, if divestment made sense for New York, why would it not make sense for Harvard and MIT?
I guess if once we enter into the conversation about the nobility versus pragmatism of divestment, there's a related topic which I think is also quite powerful. And Mariah, I'll put this one in your lap. There's this company called BlackRock Asset Management, which basically has $6 trillion you can explain it better, maybe, Mariah, but an asset manager basically takes on like pension funds and does, you know, has a fiduciary interest in maintaining the value of these funds, you know, in investing in. If you've got $100 million or $100 billion, you don't know what to do with it, you give it to BlackRock, right? And they invest it for you. They have an extremely long horizon because of those investments. So Mariah, what did, I guess, is Larry Fink of BlackRock do?
Right. Yeah. So Larry Fink, the founder and chief executive officer of BlackRock, basically said that if you, you know, that if you want the support of BlackRock, you need to do more than make profits. You have to contribute to society. And, you know, BlackRock is the largest in, you know, his firm, the BlackRock firm is the largest investor in the world and has an incredible influence. And, you know, he's when he says contribute to society, he's speaking of sort of a wide array of, you know, of
issues.
Societal.
I mean, he was talking about board diversity, yeah. Social, I mean, right. Many things, right?
Immigration policy and race relations, gay rights, all of those things. But he also included climate change in that, in those array of issues, and said that, for example, Exxon needs to be more transparent, and needs to be talking more. The Exxon had a non-engagement policy, which barred independent board which barred independent board members from meeting with shareholders. And BlackRock put a bunch of pressure on them to say, no, you need to meet with us. You need to disclose your climate, you know, risk exposure, mm-hmm. and we're not going to support you if you won't do that. And that actually worked to some measure. I don't know how extensively it worked, but Exxon has, in December, Exxon agreed to publish their climate impact reports.
Right. I remember that.
Yeah. And it's also has changed its policy of non-engagement, allowing for meetings between shareholders and independent directors. So, I, you know, I don't know if this is sort of the first domino being knocked over in some ways. But I think that's a really big deal. And I think this BlackRock, initiative is it's kind of the first that we've really seen of its.
Well, I think DR, you and I have gone round and round many times, or the three of us, about, you know, is capitalism the enemy of the planet, right? And the drive for capitalism is always about the bottom line, right? And so to introduce, you know, the social justice. Social justice, but sustainability issues. Larry Fink was not that radical, but I mean, to reintroduce that into this strict financial calculation is a change that has broad mm-hmm. implications, right? Because all of a sudden, this idea that the corporation only exists to produce a quarterly report and quarterly profits, that kind of starts to go away when a guy like Mr. Fink says you have to look to the long term and think about social issues, right? Mm-hmm. For my money, that's, as Mariah said, a crack in the wall. I mean, who knows where this could go?
Right? Well, if you read between the lines of the article, you get the sense that Larry Fink is of the view that if the private sector doesn't take steps to remedy social flaws or social injustices, eventually those private sector entities will be consumed by the social injustices. I mean, you think of, you know, we always go back to the Occupy Wall Street efforts 7 years ago and other sort of social efforts to place pressure on the private sector to make morally right decisions. I mean, you know, it's the old, you know, argument about how if the poor are starving, they'll eventually come after the rich.
Oh, yeah,
but if the rich
yeah.
take steps to make sure that the poor are not starving and the middle class is not starving, you'll have harmony in the society. So right. Larry Fink is arguing essentially, you know, the old school value of doing well by doing good, that if mm-hmm. use your efforts to benefit the society that allowed you to make all this profit, the society will be healthy enough so that you will have even more profit, essentially.
It's funny you should say that. There's a podcast I listened to by a guy named Mike Duncan, and beautiful, great. It was about, one's about the history of Rome, and the other is about revolutions in general, right? One of the revolutions mm-hmm. he goes on, like 30 or 40 podcasts about, is the French Revolution. At one point, he stops and kind of reflects on the French Revolution and saying, if the rich people in France had just given the poor people a little bit of money, they would have been happy, and the rich people would continue to be rich, right? Just exactly your point. By this ferocious hollowing out of society for the benefit of very few people ultimately leads to a collapse, right? Where mm-hmm. there's this a revolution, you know, in the canonical classical thing. So I agree with you.
Pitchforks and torches.
Yeah, I mean, who needs that? Nobody. And if people who have so much money could just recognize that they could buy off most people, you know, of moderate means, right? They just want to be the, we would, it's not like they want to, everyone wants to be a Larry Fink, right? Because they can't be, but everyone wants to eat. So anyway, I'm not sure I was very clear with that, but well, there you go. Eat the rich. That's what I say. So we got to put it down there, guys. That's an interesting. So the divestment thing in New York that happened this past week is important. It is no longer the thin edge of the wedge, but it shows that there's real things happening in the divestment world that have real world consequence, right? So we'll put it down there. Let me tell you that we'll try to put up at least a couple of the links to that of what we talked about on the blog. It'll be at massclimateaction.org/blog. Of course, we're on the Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can find us on Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Podbean, SoundCloud, et cetera, and of course on iTunes. So we'll close where we always close by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, DR, thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Mariah, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks to all the rest of you for listening. It was wonderful to have you with us. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.